What's good? What's good? We are back. Another live for Vietnam Friday, live on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. And our guest just popped in, so we about to introduce him and bring him on. He's one third of a legendary hip-hop group. They had about four albums in the 90s, and they've been compared to groups like Public Enemy, Brand Nubian, and X-Clan. Let's bring on the one and only Culture Freedom of the Poor Righteous Teachers.
Peace.
How you doing, man?
How are you, my brother?
I'm doing good, man. The weather down here flip-flops, but, you know, besides that, we good.
Yeah, it's a lot of that going on around here, so, you know, we all got to bear with it in some way.
So I did my research. I wanted to start here. So it says you and Wise Intelligent been friends since childhood, around 11 or 12. And it said something about that y'all would run around impersonating, like, I guess, MCs that were already on. Was that true?
I think that's something Wise said jokingly, you know, like,
oh, okay.
Like we all did when we was kids, you know, we said Run DMC rhymes, and we said a couple of the guys who was out, you know, long before us type of thing, but we wasn't like going out doing impersonations, literally. We was just like, you know, like we all did, you know, turn on the box, we start rapping with it, you know, that kind of a thing. So, yeah, in that aspect, yeah, we was doing that.
So the name Poor Righteous Teachers, who came up with that?
Well, we was kicking around some names. And as you know, as members of the 5% Nation, mm-hmm. you know, there's a question that's asked, who is the 5%? And then the answer is who they are, the Poor Righteous Teachers. And it goes on and on into that. So we felt like that would be an appropriate name since that's what we, you know, we're dealing with. We was like, okay, since we're dealing with that, what other name? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's how we came up with it. It comes from the 5% Nation, you know. They are the Poor Righteous Teachers. So that's pretty much how we decided to come with that.
So y'all formed in the late 80s, correct?
Yes, sir.
Late 80s. What's now, so y'all form a group. What's the next step? What's the process on we got to get heard, we got to get exposure?
Well, I mean, the first thing was to just hear ourselves. We wanted to see what
okay.
we sound like, you know, sound back. So one day we went down my late grand Irv's crib, and she had a component set where you were able to, you know, play records and record yourself for tapes or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yo, let's go down there. We had a radio. So we played the beat from the radio. And ironically, it was Sucker MCs by Run DMC.
Okay.
And just start freestyling to it. And that was our first thing that we did, you know, like little kids, you know, we was like 12, 13 years old. So we just wanted to see what we sound like. And once we heard that, we took it back, let his older brothers hear it. They was like, you know, it's whack. Y'all need to, you know, y'all need to do this, do that. Y'all need to be more like some of the other well-established groups in the area at that time. So, you know, we kind of took it to heart a little bit. And after a while went by, like maybe 3 or 4 years, hold on for a minute, my light went out. We decided that, hey, you know, let's do it again. Let's try mm-hmm. it again. And by this time, he was living on another part of town.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And by the time we got back together, he was Wise Intelligent. I was Culture Freedom. I was still messing with music. He was writing rhymes by that point. And he was a part of a group called the Magnetic Building Factors.
What? And Magnetic Building Factors?
The Magnetic Building Factors. Yeah, they was kind of like rhyming real scientific, using
yeah.
big words and all of that. And me, I was a part of a group called the God Squad.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was doing the beatbox for them. And then I kind of like bought my own equipment, you know, 8-track and all of that. And I start calling it the studio or whatever. And I was just freestyling. Like, you know, I had a joint called Freezing MCs over the Biz Markie, Nobody Beats the Biz track that I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just came through his house one day playing that joint. And he was like, yo, man, that's kind of cool. You know, you freestyling and whatever. But he was like, this is what we was doing. And I was like, man, sweet, because their rhymes was, you know, they was doing routines. I was just like wanting to just make rap,
yeah, you
know, hip hop, so to speak. And we just decided, hey, why don't we just start recording at my crib? So me, him, and the other guy in his group start recording. And eventually, the brother name was Godfather MC. And he just wasn't, I was just going to say, he wasn't as adamant about trying to do something with the music as we were. So, because mm-hmm. we cut out a lot of activity, a lot of things we were involved in order to get focused on something we thought, we believed to be more positive at the time. So eventually, you know, some things transpire and it end up being me and Wise. The group I was in, God Squad, they had got like a little local deal. And the guy was like, we don't sign beatboxes. You know what I mean? He was like, you know, beatboxes, you know, they kind of come and go. So we just going to roll with the DJ and this guy. And I was like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? And but I told Wise, I said, me and you, we going to still keep working on our stuff. And eventually that situation didn't work out. But me and Wise, we got a little bit more serious. And I knew Tony D from a previous situation with the God Squad. We recorded at his house. And he lived in a suburb mm-hmm. outside of Trenton, New Jersey. So
okay.
The next time he came and came around the projects, because he, you know, Tony D kind of had like what we called back then a ghetto pass.
Okay. So
he could come through the projects, chill, do what he was doing, you know, and everything, and just skip out. You know what I mean? Play some beats or whatever. So one day he came through and I was like, yo, you need to check me and my man out. Blah, blah, blah. He was like, all right, where he at? Go get him. So I went and got Wise, and Wise was like, Wise didn't even want to rap. Because Tone was still saying like that Harvey Wallbanger kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And Wise was like, nah, I ain't spitting. You know what I mean? But then Tone tried to battle him. You know what I mean? So Wise was like, I'm going to say something real quick and end this. You know? And Wise started spitting, and Tone was like, because really all Tone wanted to do was to hear him. You know what I mean? And he finally heard him. He was like, yo, I want to work with y'all, whatever. So we set up some studio time. We brought in the Time to Say Peace sample. And he brought in the first song we did was a song called Word is Bond.
Okay.
That's on Profile as a single, but we didn't put it on the album.
Okay.
And, we did that, and then he sampled up the Time to Say Peace track. And we did that day, and that was our first demo.
Now, the Profile situation, was that because of the Tone D guy?
It was because, so there was a guy named Eric IQ Gray, right? And he was, if you ever seen the movie Beat Street, right?
Uh-huh.
The DJ on Beat Street, his buddy that was walking around handling all the business and doing all of that, IQ was a figure like that, you know what I mean? He was kind of a visionary during at his time, and he saw himself as a record exec or something like that. So he would carry his briefcase around, and you know, and we saw him, and we was like, "Yo, why don't you, why don't you help us out, put our stuff out?"
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't right away. We had got with YZ, because okay. YZ met YZ at somebody's something.
Yeah.
And, why does he end up coming around? Part of my light, man. I got this ring light hooked up, trying to get more light. But anyway, YZ used to come around and, you know, in Trent and hang out there, because he was from Hightstown, which was another suburb kind of outside on the outskirts of Trenton.
Okay.
And he came around one day. We chilled. We talked. He talked to us about putting our music out. His partner name was Tim Baylor. On that end, and he had some stuff he was putting out on that record label, so he was like, all right, cool. And YZ was also a business partner of Tony D as well with Two Tone Production.
Okay.
So we, you know, we signed a little contract they had and all of this, and then they was like, we're going to put your music out next summer. And mind you, we was already in one summer, you know what I mean? And the style that Wise was doing and the flavor that we was doing, we was like, yo, this is now. This is this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't want y'all to sit around with our music for all this time and people in our style or whatever. So we was just like, listen, let's just before we even get started and get deep in this situation, let's just cut it. You know, and I think at the time, YZ thought tone has something to do with that, like influenced us or something like that. But that was the start of that. We was just like, nah, we don't think it's a good idea for us to do this like this. So we didn't go with it. And eventually we got let up out of that, you know, that contract. And we went with Northside Records, which was IQ. He was like, yo, I could put your stuff out right now. It ain't nothing. And it seemed like, you know, these guys were big time because they just, you know, they had little independent labels.
Yeah.
And so we went with that. And that's where we released our first single on. But to get to your question was, we went up to this party one time that they was having in New York. And Red Alert was there. Jungle Brothers okay. was performing. And I think Mike G and Jungle Brothers and Red Alert are cousins.
Okay. So
he was there and we passed him the record. And he checked it out. He liked it. And he kept playing it. And then one of the guys, the A&R name, I think his name was Manny from Profile, heard the record and he called Red. He was like, what is that record you keep playing with Peace in it?
Uh-huh.
It's like it's the Poor Righteous Teachers. They, you know, they got their own label situation, blah 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 blah. And then from there, he helped us get signed. So we actually got signed through Red Alert. Tony D did the production, you know, he helped us with the production. But at this time, Tone had he was on Tommy Boy. He had a song called It's My Day. On the flip side, it was a guy named Gino G was on there. And, yeah, Tone had a couple little situations going on. So, I mean, we wasn't small fries to him, but he had his hands full with the ESD Posse, Too Cool Posse, and a couple of other artists he was working with. So Red Alert was actually the guy that pressed the issue that got us connected with Profile.
Now, you know, I interview a lot of people and they always talk about some crazy situations with the labels or something crazy the labels do. What was y'all's dealings like with Profile? Was it good or ups and downs? Or
it was ups and downs, man. Like, you know, in the music industry, you don't get what you deserve most of the time. You get what you negotiate.
Okay.
And that we was coming in, you know, as young as we were, I think we was like 18, 19, you know, fresh off the block. And, you know, we didn't get a deal as bad as some, but it wasn't a good deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't a good deal, but I will say this, you know, when you, at that time to have videos out to be on tour and stuff like that was kind of a big deal because it's because of that deal with Profile and the four records that we put out with them is the reason why people know us. So, you know, to take accountability for our own thing, you know, it just took a little time for us to learn, like, this is this, this is that, this is mechanicals, this is royalties, this is, you need this guy every now and then, you know, you need this guy more often. So it was one of those things, you know, where we just had to learn, man. It was a learning curve, you know, and could it have been a better deal? I think, yeah, because back then, man, a lot of artists, R&B, jazz, you name it, was getting ripped because they just simply didn't understand the language.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was one of those things, but it's not like a horror story. Like, we didn't make any money or we, you know, we had to kind of pursue them after some years because of, you know, some other stuff where they wasn't, you know, giving us account of what was going on and we didn't receive royalties for a little bit after they sold to Sony.
Yeah.
You know, so, yo, let me open this light up so I can put some light in. I try to use this one light, but it keep going out. So let me open this
okay.
thing more light on. Pardon me, man. Just give me a second.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want to be talking to you in the dark, so that's probably the best I could do right now. Hold on for a minute. All right, cool. Yeah, so it wasn't the worst deal, but it wasn't the best.
Well, let me ask you this. This wasn't a question on my list, but labels, I just think like they probably prefer to sign younger artists all the time because they know younger artists aren't going to really know the language and contracts. Would you agree with that?
I would say so. I mean, you know, I would definitely say so because, you know, it's all about them. A lot of times they're not trying to work it out for you.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to work it out for themselves. So I would agree. I mean, they try to keep the music young, right? Because as you grow, you gain knowledge. After you gain knowledge, you should gain wisdom. And now you know how to properly apply that wisdom. And you know, hey, okay, I'm not going to do this. I will do that. But this is why I say partly it was good, right? Because they never told us what to say.
Okay. Like, yeah. Y'all got the musical freedom. Yeah.
Yeah, they never was like, yo, y'all shouldn't say this, y'all shouldn't say that. I mean, I remember one time, you know, back in the day, you used to be able to say gay or whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And or use certain verbiage that people would be like, it wasn't no sweat off nobody's back to hear something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as the climate started to change, it was a show we had somewhere where they was like, man, they can't come because they said a word or whatever on their record. They made us aware of it. They made us aware of it, but they didn't say we're not putting your music out or nothing like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, like I said, it wasn't always the best situation, but we had certain freedoms. You know what I mean?
And it seemed like the times have always been sensitive. We talk about sensitive times nowadays, but like it seems like even back then, you said one word and you said, hey, talking about you can't come.
Yeah, it was like we had a show or whatever. And it was like, you know, we're going to cancel the show because we listened to the record and they said this. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, we didn't say, all right, I'm going to put you on blast because you said this or you reneged on the show. He was just like, yeah. To the next thing. You know what I mean? And then the label didn't say anything else about it after that.
And that was the show promoters that said that to y'all, that they were going to cancel the show?
Pretty much. I mean, whoever was putting the show on, I guess they might have got flack from somebody.
Yeah.
And we was just like, I mean, but to us, like, you got to understand, you know, we was from the hood, the projects, and we use certain verbiage every day. Like,
yeah.
Nobody, I mean, that person could be standing right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it was a thing like, all right, whatever. I know what I am. I know what I do, whatever. So you did what you did. And it was like, if somebody say something, it's like, okay, you know, whatever.
So y'all appeared on King Son's 1990 album, Righteous But Ruthless. Did y'all already have a relationship with him?
Kind of, sort of. Not like so King Son was from more of Northern Jersey.
Okay.
Up there near Newark, Patterson.
Okay.
You know, that way. We were what they would call Central New Jersey. So sometimes you'll hear us say Central New Jerusalem on the record.
Okay.
Right. So we was referring to Central New Jersey. But we was familiar with his music. We were signed to the same label. So we had like, I think we had like a meet and greet or something like that where MTV did like a special on Profile Records. I believe it was us, Sweet T, Twin Hype, and a couple other artists. And we was kicking it then, you know, chopping it up.
Yeah.
And then I think Tone was going to produce him. And he had a partner called Troy the Wonder Boy.
Uh-huh.
And they were producing some stuff. And then from that relationship, you know, Son was like, all right, I want y'all on this track. We worked it out. And then I think Troy is the one that actually dropped the beat for that. But nah, we never like hung out, but we was always cool. You know, it was, you know, Jersey thing. He was a 5%er. So, you know, he was like our brother. That's the way we looked at it.
So I want to ask you about a track that you helped produce, Word from the Wise. It's got a sample from The Boss by James Brown.
Well, IQ produced that song.
Okay. Okay. It said you co-produced it on a line.
Well, no, Tony D. So IQ produced it and Tony D enhanced it with some drums and stuff and did the scratches on it. That's the only, that song and maybe one or two more is the only songs where Shahi didn't do the scratches on.
Well, when y'all did that song, did y'all already hear Ice-T's version up to that point, or?
We might have heard it. But
y'all, that was right at the same exact time that.
Yeah, but back then they would take a track and flip it their own way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There was like when there was popping samples, you know, like James Brown, the James Brown sample that En Vogue used, and then LL used it for Boomin' System, and then, you know, Total used it for Can't You See, and then En Vogue used for, so it was like you could have like four or five different hits out at a time with the same beat. But it was one of those unspoken things, like if this person absolutely killed the track, like, I mean, uh-huh. like to the where you don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, if I do this, it's not gonna have the same shine as the only one I seen do that was Ice Cube with Jackin' for Beats when he kind of took all the like popular songs that was out at the time and did his own thing. But I mean, not necessarily. Yeah. Some people have a problem with it, but we didn't really look at it that way. He sampled it and we was just like, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Wise went in the studio, he had some bars, and
yeah.
Got in there and did what we usually do. But
I love Ice-T, but all due respect, he wasn't out rapping Wise.
I don't think he would say that neither, you know. But Ice-T was for that time, Ice-T has some bars though, you know what I mean? Like in terms like Colors is a classic.
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
Based on the subject matter that he was trying to get across, that's a classic. Like, we wouldn't have took Colors, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We wouldn't have used Colors beat during that time, you know, because, Ice-T married that beat, you know what I mean? It was just, like, meant for him, his voice, tone, everything. So, yeah. But I would say Wise, but see, he's another Jersey rapper, man. So I give him credit. I mean, you know, he came from Jersey and went to LA.
Yeah. So I want to talk about one of my favorite songs and my favorite album for y'all, which is Word Is Life is my favorite song y'all ever did.
Wow. Okay. That's what's up.
And New World Order is actually my favorite album. Cause I feel like, you know, I always feel like artists are supposed to get better. Like if your first album is your best and you done dropped a bunch of albums, I think, I don't know, man. It doesn't say much to me. You know what I'm saying? Like your music should get better. So I felt like that album was really good. The songs were really great at that time. Do you feel like at that time labels were not prioritizing conscious music at that time?
I think they started to move away a little bit from it because, you know, they was getting more into, you know, it was the Bad Boy era.
Yeah.
We dropped that around the same time that dropped. It was 96. There was a lot on, you know, with Big, Tupac. It was just a lot going on during that time. And then Profile was actually selling the label to Sony. So I can't say in our situation, because look, they put out all the rest of the records that was conscious.
Yeah.
So, but it was a lot going on. It was just a lot going on. And then that younger generation was just starting to come into it, you know? So I would say, you know, I would say there's always been an agenda to stop consciousness. You know what I'm saying? That's always been it, right? You know, KRS said it. I mean, Public Enemy said it, fight the power, it's daytime, you know, suckers never play me, you know? So there's always been a thing where consciousness wasn't as popular. You know what I mean? Even though the conscious movement was there, like, put it like this. As we knew hip hop, there was all type of stuff, right? We had dance, you know, Humpty Hump. We had, you know what I mean, conscious music. You know, we had people who was even on the club tip or whatever.
Yep.
So it was all kinds of stuff. There was a variety because when we dropped our first record, we was on tour with Ice Cube on his first solo, big solo record, you know, America's Most Wanted. So we was performing for the same audience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we had, you know, Yo-Yo, Kid Rock, Ghetto Boys on certain dates. So it was a variety of stuff. I think it got to the point to where, you know, they took out the learning and just kept recess. You know what I mean? Because recess is important for your growth and development as well, but you need consciousness as well. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, people just started. I would say like this. You had Chuck D, Flavor Flav, and Public Enemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was as if they took out Chuck and just left Flav. Even though Flav has a certain level of consciousness, he was there to bring a certain type of, you know, vibe to the music. But
yeah,
both of them together was perfect. You feel me?
Yeah, he played a specific role, and his role wasn't to necessarily be the front runner.
Yeah, but so that's how I feel about hip hop in general. Everybody had a role to play. Everybody had a part. Everybody was speaking for the community, because in our community, there's not just one personality.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like society likes to paint us as a people or as a culture one kind of way, but when you present yourself in another kind of way, it's like, nah, we not really, that's not the image, that's not the thing we want to promote. You know, people don't want to hear about this and that and that, and they take it upon themselves to kind of like pull stuff and do whatever. But you know, people back then, we just loved what was dope. You know, if you were saying do the Humpty dance and the beat was crazy,
do the Humpty Hump.
You know what I mean? Because I remember at our album release party, Red Alert was playing that.
Yeah.
He stopped it, and he was like, listen, I'm going to play whatever I want to play. If it's dope, I'm going to play it. You know what I mean? And we was in New York. You know, I believe we was like in Queens or somewhere like that. We was downtown. And he played the joint, man, and the beat was, you know, he said, y'all can stand around like wallflowers if y'all want to. You know? Red, because see, back then DJs broke music, man.
Yeah.
So that was the job. DJ was going to break music. If it was dope or he liked it or he played it. You know what I mean? But, you know, once people start seeing the benefit, because you had the golden era, that's when people first start really like making some kind of serious money, right? Not the capital they be making now, but back then, and it was like, you know, folks start saying, okay, this works. I get more radio if I do this, and I get da-da-da-da-da. And then, you know, they start figuring it out. Like, okay, they start doing the numbers, doing the math, instead of just doing the culture.
So I saw where they label y'all as, like, militant consciousness. When I interviewed, like, Just Ice, he said he never called himself a gangster rapper. That's just, like, labels that the record label put on him. Is that, like, is militant consciousness, would you say that's a proper?
Well, it would be militant to anybody that feel threatened by it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They consider Christ militant. You know, they consider Christ a problem, a threat to the establishment, because he was going against the status quo. I think anytime somebody go against the status quo, they feel like that's why. You know, Brother Jay said, she said, now they call me militant. What does this mean? Do I carry a gun and live the army scene? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, what does that mean? Because you speak in power, you speak in truth to power. You know what I mean? And I thought that's what it was all about, right? Being better, growing, speaking truth, because the truth is the only real thing that changes you. You know what I'm saying? For the better anyway. And, you know, I don't think we were being militant. I think we were just coming back into ourselves, right? Because if you have your culture stripped from you, if you have your God, your language, the food you eat, you know, your name, everything that made you you, everything that you could use to identify with who you are stripped away from you, and now you have this rebirth of that consciousness. You have that rebirth because nature rolls like this. If you leave nature alone, it will fix itself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you leave a people alone, eventually they'll get back to who they were. They'll find themselves, right? Because that's just the natural order of things. But so to me, the militant would be the person who's always policing you, who's always trying to get you to stop being a free thinker, the person who's trying to force their culture on you, the person who's trying to force anything on you. You know what I mean? That's the militant.
Yeah.
You know, you're just trying to survive, you know what I mean? And you know, we were speaking about that. We were speaking about unity. We were speaking about peace. We were speaking about, you know, like the song you said, you like a word from the wise.
Word is life.
You said word from
the wise. Yeah. The one earlier, yeah.
Yeah, so on that particular song, at the end of it, Shahi is scratching something and it says, ask my brother, what is he saying? He's telling black kids to get a good education. He's telling black kids to learn the knowledge of themselves so they can love themselves. You see what I'm saying? So that was the message. Learn the knowledge of yourself so you can love yourself. Because if you, during Jim Crow, they had a bunch of, you know, Sambo dolls and this and that. So it was on site. And that's why I say what we was dealing with is different than what a lot of people dealing with, because there's some things you can hide in this society and won't nobody know you doing or you dealing with until you expose it or until you tell them. But being the original man is something that's on site. So they attacked our very likeness and made it unpopular to even look the way we look. So, and they put certain ideals and lifestyles and they associated those things with that look, right? So as soon as somebody saw you, they thinking thief, killer, thug, murderer, you know, rapist, you know, ignorant. So we counteract that with consciousness. You know, we counteract that with the gods. We counteract that with righteous names. You know what I'm saying? Instead of a name, a killer name, we counteracted ignorance. The only way to counteract ignorance is with intelligence. So, you know, we had to be wise and intelligent. And what is wisdom? Wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. But first, you got to do the knowledge. You got to get the right knowledge. You got to get the proper knowledge. You got to get a proper education. You get a proper education that tells you, no, we ain't savages. We ain't beasts. We the original man. We the makers, the owners, the cream of the planet Earth. We the father of civilization, gods of the universe. We not none of this stuff that they saying we are. We don't, you know, God don't hate us. God love us like he love everybody else. So, you know what I mean? And what God hates, he hates. So we were not the hated. You know what I mean? But there was movies, an educational system, a militant educational system that went about teaching us, you know, this trick knowledge or these lies and poor self-image. So what we were doing, we were counteracting that. You know, you had the thesis and the antithesis, you know, and the only right thing to do is to say, nah, we not that. This is who we are, you know, and if you really want to know the truth, this is da 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 da, you know.
So let me ask you this: I saw where it said you worked on some solo projects under Culture Free Music. Can you tell us about any of those?
Well, Cult Free Music is
Cult Free Music. My bad, Cult Free.
Yeah. I think for a while, like, you know, so on the New World Order is where I first stepped into start really producing, like actually putting the music that I was putting to the drum machine out. And by that point, me and Shahi, we had grown as producers. So we started producing more. Like the song with the Fugees called Allies, I produced that track.
Okay.
I did some stuff on Wise solo record, Tu Shum Pang, his first solo record. I did Tu Shum Pang, Rastafarian Daughter, and I think of maybe a few other tracks. But on the New World Order joint is, you know, is when me and Shah basically stepped up. You know, it was like, okay, we grew into our own. Tony D had other stuff he was doing, and we was like, okay, now it's time for us to do this, you know, and to take over fully. But I produced None Contest on the Black Out of the Black Business album.
Okay.
And Shahi did Get Off the Crack. You know, what was 144K, Nobody Move. So we were exercising our production skills, you know what I mean? And I would spit some bars here and there and sing, you know, like on Shaquille and stuff like that. But it wasn't until we kind of slowed down and, you know what I mean? And I started to explore more what I would sound like as an artist, and just if I was rapping the whole song, what would that sound like? You know, and in the earlier days, you know, you have a few people saying, yo, I want to hear Culture, do-da-da-da. But we had a if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of attitude. You know what I mean?
Okay. Like,
we worked together well. We gelled together well. This is what we doing. So we just kept doing what we was doing. But with the Cold Free stuff, it was just me making joints, you know, and producing myself. Yeah. You know, because Tony D, he never produced a solo song for me. Shahi, he produced Get Off the Crack, which I rapped on that. But and then I rapped on what was it? Here We Go Again. You know, and then I rapped on Me Fresh. That was a joint that Tone did, and I did spit like, you know, maybe 8 bars or whatever on Me Fresh, but it was just like little things here and there. But with the solo stuff, I was just staying busy, staying active. You know, with songs like Ain't Nothing. You know what I mean? Because I think people thought, like, could he really rap? Could he really? So most of my solo stuff was just me showing, like, yo, I could rap. I've been knew how to rap. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, my talents are, has ADD, man. You know, because 1 minute I'm rapping, 1 minute I'm singing, 1 minute I'm producing. But with rapping, I was just like, you know, ain't nothing complicated. Everything clearly stated. When I'm on a microphone, haters hate it. I'm underrated by so many. I don't be asking no more in this game. I'm like straight gimme. You know what I mean? So my attitude was like, it ain't nothing. You know, it ain't nothing. It ain't not cause I, like everybody else, right? They say I am hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, I love the culture. I wouldn't be in the culture and be a part of the culture if I wasn't able to perform in the culture. And within Poor Righteous Teachers, you had all of the elements of hip hop. You know, mastered. Like when I came in, I was like a master in the beatbox. You know what I mean? Like Wise used to come and get me to battle cast in high school and in junior high, you know, and then Wise was a break dancer, graffiti writer. You know, Shahi was, you know, DJ, producer, you know what I mean? So we had all the elements right there within the group. Wise would be first to rhyme, you know, even like, say for instance, Run DMC. Even though DMC was cold, Run was like the guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that just happens in groups, man, you know, and when it happens and people love what y'all doing, I think it's important not to struggle with that.
Naughty by Nature, Tretch was the guy, and Vin Rock was just, you know.
Yeah, he was doing his thing, but, you know, all of my material, I write my own material.
Yeah.
It was like, because Digging, me and Shah, we would dig together. You know what I mean? Like when he passed, I didn't get none of his records. I don't have none of his beats, none of that stuff.
Damn.
Everything that you hear from me is from me getting chops, chopping it up, and stuff that we went out and bought together. Like we dug together. We used to go digging in various spots. And yeah, man, I was just like, yo, you know, whatever. I was like, one joint, I was like, I'm an MC's dream, the glue in your rhyme scheme. No matter what, I still remain supreme. Got my own money, call me Akeem. I wasn't right too, I found me a queen. I serve God, so I let it be seen. Deliver rhymes like I'm serving a fiend. You know, so I was just like, I think it kind of can create some kind of a complex when people think that, you know what I mean? And I'm a party rocker. You know, my main rocking a party. You know, and like one of my favorite artists was Biz Markie. You know, and that was the first joint I rapped.
Nobody beats the Biz.
Yeah, and I rapped over that beat. So my thing was entertain people. I was a joke teller.
Yeah, know? Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I was a joke teller, and I just put all of that together. You know what I mean? It was about people laughing. Like, you know, the hood could be a very dry in a very dark place at times, and certain personalities help keep it live and funny and lively. You know what I mean? And I didn't mind being that person sometimes. And I think it translated over to the music, you know? So I just played my role and played my part. That's why this one joint I said, me and hip hop, we go way back before blunts and crack, before Will Smith knew how to act. C Free played his role in the back. Now I step to the front and spit it hard like whatever you want. So I'm trying to, like, you know, just letting people know right now, which I you know, I got some serious joints, like for what, where I compare myself to money. I compare myself to a gun in the second verse. And it's more deep. I got joints that I did with other people that my man Neff 150 called One Time, One Chance. And this was during the George Floyd situation. And I was just talking. I said, all I do is spread love. Never mind all the hate. I'll delete you on the spot. Ain't no trying to debate. To keep it all real, my ninja, we all great. Started from the bottom, showed up a little late. But I'm here now. Fist up, no fear now. Heard and felt everywhere now. People saying that they ready and they down for the cause. The revolution on and the devil's got to fall. That's all they really want to see. Them stop killing people looking like you and me. Strange fruit in the south hanging from a tree. I'm not a villain. I'm a be who I want to be. You're going to see it all in real time. Live it out through my bloodline. We sun people, so we going to shine. Before I leave, I'm going to get mine. You say you down with me, really, yo? Then stop lying and stop crying. You know, and that's a part of my personality that if you know me, you know. But if not, I'm more about, man, just positive vibes, staying, you know, uplifted. Because like I said, where I'm from, it's easy to fall into depression. It's easy to fall into a negative mindset. So like I said, I was always the guy to try to bring a smile to everybody's face, to say something funny. You know what I mean? To tell a joke, you know, even if sometimes, because there's a saying that a wise man can play the part of a fool, but a fool can never play the part of a wise man. You know what I mean? And just like if you know Flavor Flav, you know that brother's deep. You know what I'm saying? He's not just surface level, even though he did what he did in the group. But he got a lot to say, man. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I just was like, well, you know, now that we not doing this as much, now it's time to say it. So when we perform now, I'll do a couple of my solo joints.
Okay.
In the show, and then Wiser do some of his joints from, you know, his solo albums. And, you know, and we just keep it pushing like that. But also, before I really start rapping, I was producing local artists. Like, you know, my thing was, okay, we did our thing. We got a little shine. Who's next? So I did stuff for my man Don Black. I don't know if you heard of him. I did stuff for my man Mike Molles, my man Laquan, my man Stink from Camden. You know, I was producing people from Philly. You know, my man Ozzy. my man Stash. So I was producing. That's what I was doing, working on my producing chops, you know, in between the Poor Righteous Teachers records and stuff like that. So I was focused on that.
You said Ozzy. Ozzy, is he like a light-skinned cat?
Well, Ozzy, he's from Philly. He was a part of a group called Name. It was him and Grand Agent.
Okay.
Yeah, Grand Agent is nasty too, man. They was a good group, and Grand Agent still be putting out stuff. He just released a joint that I produced for him, Taj from Souls of Mischief.
Okay.
Yeah. It's on my Instagram page, man. I produced that joint for him.
So what can we expect from you in the near future?
Man, just right now. So I'm 54 right now. I'll be 55 in almost short of a month, right?
Yeah.
And for me, man, it's just I'm still very much in love with the culture. So you just expect more music, just outreach.
That's okay. What
I'm focused on now, because I just did a celebrity food battle. Well, actually, it's called Charity Chopped in the Borough.
Okay.
So it's a suburb right outside of Nashville, and it was me and two other executive chefs. We were teamed up with some local influencers in the community, people who own magazines and different situations. And we paired up with them and did a food battle.
Okay.
It was to raise money for Habitat for Humanity, Second Food Harvest, and I think it's Amelia's Closet or something like that. So it was food, clothing, and sheltering that we raised money for. And I was on Team Food, and we happened to win, by the way.
So you're in Tennessee now?
Yeah, I've been in Tennessee, man, for over 21 years.
Okay, my sister stays in Seymour, Tennessee right now with her husband and kids.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been staying here and going, you know, back and forth up to New Jersey, Atlanta, just kind of moving around, man. I still got, you know, footprints in Jersey because, you know, we did a play in New Jersey about a year and a half ago. And it was called Ghetto Gods of Divine Land. It was the first of its kind. And we did that play. And it was based on our music and stuff like that. So it was real dope. So we still do stuff there, you know. But I'm concentrating on, man, is just figuring out ways to use my life and my experience in various areas, man, to help other people. You know, I'm a licensed and ordained minister. Okay. So I do that. I've been a chef for over 30 years. So, you know, I still do that. I operate a food truck called Hip Hop's Top Chef.
For real?
Yeah. Two
Hip Hop's Top Chef?
Yeah. 3 days out of the week, that's what I do. So, yeah, man, I was the head catering chef for Belmont University for 5 years, and I catered the 2020 debates between Biden and Trump.
What's your go-to plate to cook?
Oh yeah.
What? No, I'm saying, what's your go-to plate to cook as a chef? Like that, anytime you make it, it's undeniable.
Here's something ironic, right? So during the pandemic, right? We was laid off pretty much, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of people. Yeah, that shut down crazy.
Yeah, being a catering chef, you know, ain't nobody getting together.
Yeah, yeah.
So while I was at home, you know, the internet popping, so I was like, listen, I'm gonna do this thing called Hip Hop's Top Chef. And before then, I had a battle, a food battle. It wasn't an in-person battle, but I was called out by my man from UMC's NY Oil. And so
Cool Kim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed him a while back.
Yeah, so he did something, and it was all, you know, all in love. He did something where he was doing something, and he was like, "I'm calling out all chefs, da 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 da." So Wise was like, "Yo, my man, Coach will take you."
Yeah.
Right. So Wise hit me up, and I was like, "I'm game for it." So I did something. I think I cooked the salmon dish and all of that, and it was funny, man. Me and him was going back and forth, so it created a situation where Hakeem Green got in it.
I interviewed him too. Yeah.
Yeah, him.
Staying Alive.
It was another brother that was in it.
Hakeem could cook too.
Well, he, as far as I know, I mean, he dabble in the kitchen a little something.
Okay.
I don't think he consider himself like a chef, but yeah, he dabbled around, and he got in it somehow, and we was making videos about each other and all this stuff. And yeah, so that was fun. So when we during the pandemic, I was like, he called himself the Iron Chef of hip hop. Right. So, you know, in traditional battle mode, I was like, wait a minute, how you gonna call yourself the Iron Chef of hip hop? You know, once Wise hit me up, so yeah, we went for the title. You know what I mean? But so they end up doing something in person somewhere in New Jersey, and it was all love, man. They brought a little potluck out and everybody was eating. I think Hakeem Green won. You okay. know, I might have brought his mom's like stuffing or something like that.
Does that count? You bringing your mom's?
I don't know. I mean, they was having a potluck or whatever. She might have helped him, but it was real funny, man. It was fun. And but I did Hip Hop's Top Chef. I said I'm gonna let NY Oil have that because he was the first one to say he was the Iron Chef of Hip Hop. So I was like, I'm Hip Hop's Top Chef then, you know what I mean? So I was doing that, and then I was showing all of these dishes that I was doing, and people was like, yo, you know, the food looks beautiful, but we can't taste it. So that's when I did my put it in there barbecue sauce and rub.
Yeah.
So when if you was asking me what's a go-to dish, I would use my put it in there barbecue sauce and rub, because the barbecue sauce, when I was working at this private club, and I used to make this meatloaf and make this homemade barbecue sauce and put it on there, and every time we made it, it sold out.
Damn. You know?
Then one of my first tastings I did when I was a lead chef at Gaylord Opryland, which is the largest non-casino hotel in the country. My first tasting to get a lead position, I used this special spice that I came up with. So during the pandemic, I put both of them out. And part of the money went to Second Food Harvest.
Okay.
Because when you laid off, you know, you kind of still getting part of your pay.
Yeah. And
since I was eating, I was like, man, listen, there's people out here that ain't eating. So, and they was like, you know, for this amount, you could feed this amount of people, you know, three times a day. So I was like, yo, if you buy the barbecue sauce, then part of the proceeds is going to Second Food Harvest to make sure other families are eating during this time. So, you know, my thing is, you know, right now, like I said, at this stage in my life, you know, obviously we all got to make money to maintain our life, our lifestyle or whatever. But I'm trying to find ways to give back and use my skill set to help people instead of being caught up in the building all day.
That's what's up. That's a great story right there, man. I mean, because you just named a bunch of guys I interviewed. And Cool Kim always has that Beats and Barbecue every year. I want to go next year.
Yeah, I think he lives in Atlanta now.
It's in Georgia, but it's not in Atlanta per se, but he's in Georgia.
Yeah, okay. Well,
a lot of cats from up top move down south. I mean,
yeah.
You got Big Daddy Kane's in Raleigh. Sadat stays in Raleigh. I mean, he works at the hospital up there. You got one Lords of Underground. Last time I remember, Jazzo was staying in Georgia. Crazy Drazy was staying in Georgia.
Yeah, I just think, man, sometimes people want to change a pace and a change of scenery. You know what I mean? And we all, most of our family migrated from various places in the South.
South anyways, yeah. Everybody got North, a cousin in New York and North Carolina.
Yeah, I got family all over, man. Chi-Town, L.A., I mean, you name it. Long Beach, Georgia, Florida, everywhere. You know what I mean? So that's where our roots basically at. And, you know, it was a good change of pace, change of scenery. Allowed me, like I said, to kind of hone in and zone in on various things like ministry. You know, what else could I do? You know what I mean? Outside of rapping and making beats. And also, you know, I raised two seeds down here. You know what I mean? I raised my oldest, which is Azalea. She's 32. My son, Malachi, he's 27.
Ooh, they grown.
Yeah, he done picked up the mic. So, you know, he be doing shows here locally, like at Top Golf and stuff like that. So his handle online is Mally Got Bands.
Before we let you go, man, any shout-outs you want to do?
Man, shout-out to everybody, man. Shout-out to, you know, all the true blue hip-hoppers, man, from every area, every corner of the planet Earth. A special shout-out to all my people up Jersey. You know how we do. Shout-out to all my people right here in the Nashville, Tennessee area who's been mad supportive, showed me love. Man, shout-out to you, man, for bringing me on. You feel me?
I appreciate you taking the time out, man. And you're a friend of the show. More than welcome to come on anytime. I do live music reviews, so if you want to send me something to review on the show, please do.
Yeah, so I'll send you a couple of my joints. Just send me the info, and I'll send you. I don't know if you heard the whole album. I put out the Laminar Flow, and then I put out the Tools of the Trade. Real quick before we go, my man Neff150, he was originally from New Jersey, who moved to Georgia. During the pandemic, I did a whole album with him, and unfortunately, hey, he has succumbed to COVID.
Oh man! So
what I did was I took some joints from my Tools of the Trade, and then I took some joints that I did with him, and then I took some joints that I didn't release yet, and I just made one joint called Laminar Flow. So at least people would be able to hear what we did together and hear what he's doing. So it's called Laminar Flow. And basically Laminar Flow is the flow of fluid, a flow of water where it looks still, but it's actually moving. And that goes right along with me as an MC. It looked like I'm still, but I'm actually moving.
Is that on DSPs?
That is on Bandcamp.
Bandcamp. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Look for Culture Freedom, Laminar Flow.
On Bandcamp,
man. And check it out, man. If you like a joint on there, play it. If not, I can point you to it or send you one of the joints. But yeah, man, check it out.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your night, man.
No doubt, man. Appreciate you. Peace.
All right, peace. Well, there you have it, Culture Freedom, Poor Righteous Teachers. One of the biggest groups in hip hop history. Really great into the interview where he told the story about having a chef contest against Kool Kim and Hakeem Green. I don't know if that's fair though. The Hakeem Green possibly had his mom's help cook it. That's kind of cheating when you got Mom Duke's recipes sometimes. Shouts out to my man Jones. Appreciate you. Dope History, Grand Agent, peace, have a great Born Day, Anything on Streaming, and Revolutionary Culinary. I know, right? Revolutionary Culinary. I didn't expect it to be some old Iron Chef or whatnot. Yeah, so I'm going to be doing music reviews tomorrow. Sunday, we're going to be doing Conspiracy Theory. And we're going to be talking about the topic is, did aliens build the pyramids or help build the pyramids? And we're going to try to have about at least 3 or 4 people on for that. So anybody that wants to come on is more than welcome. DM me. I will send you the link. And it will be 6 p.m. Eastern time this Sunday. Also tomorrow, I'm going to do live music reviews. And I'm going to also talk about the topic of Young Thug, where he was talking about he paid $50,000 for Young Gun for Gunna's album to go number one over the Weeknd's album at that time. And we're going to talk about that as well. I'm not going to get into too much of it. I want to say shouts out to everybody tuning in live on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Shouts out to my man, John Jones. Get well. Shouts out to Culture Freedom for taking the time out. That was about an hour long interview, and definitely, you know, ended the interview off with a very, very interesting story. And it goes to show you that a lot of these artists from that era, you know, 80s, 90s, they need to work together and stick together and stay associated and support each other's stuff. And, you know, like, I think if, like, all the cats from the 90s, like, every time an artist from the 90s drops an album or a single, if everybody just, you know, likes, comments, shares it to the story, you know, and you got, like, if you got, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of artists doing this from that era, trust me, man, everybody's music is going to get way more exposure. Everybody from that era of music that loves that kind of music, they're going to see it for the most part, because they're going to see every artist that everybody's pretty much following that from the 90s, you know, no matter what their followers is, they're going to all see nothing but 90s shit, man. But, you know, cats are never really stick together totally like that. Some people unify, come together in small amounts, but, you know, we're definitely not going to unify as a whole anytime soon, especially not in this country. Not the way things have been going. I know that much. We totally divided. But I'm about to wrap it up, man. Don't forget, audio version will be downloaded and uploaded to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much, much more. Find this little outro, and we about to be out. Peace.